It's David Knight.
Well, it's Monday, November the 3rd, 6th rather, 2017. I'm David Knight. We're going to be taking a look at the tragedy yesterday and the calls for gun control, the reactions of the left to the mainstream media, the stories that they will not tell you about the heroes who shut this down, the heroes with guns. And this is the story that is now emerging of who these individuals are, how they shut this down. So we're going to have clips from that. We're also going to be talking to Mark Collins. You may know Mark Collins, he's played George Washington in many productions in the documentary Revelation that we sold here at InfoWars. He goes around to schools and he tells people about real American history as George Washington. He is a spot-on doppelganger from his appearance down to his size. It's just amazing how uncannily the resemblance is. But he is also a pastor. And he was a pastor at this church for a while as a temporary pastor. He had served there. He knew the people there very well, knew the pastor there. He knew knows most of the church there. And as he heard about the shooting, he went there to see what he could do to help. He's going to be giving us an update as to what's going on there, the condition of the people who were there. And we're also going to be talking to Rob Dew, who went down there yesterday to file reports from the site. We're going to have some pictures that have not been seen before, they've not been aired before. So we're going to be talking about all of those issues as we come up. It's amazing when you look at this, the death and destruction that we've had here. This is something that we've been concerned about for a while. As a matter of fact, it was a few years ago here at InfoWars that I interviewed a man who wrote a book about a church that he was in South Africa. His name is Charles Van Wyk, and he wrote a book. You can buy it at WND Books, and I think it was the title of it was Shooting Back. And we talked at length about what happened in that particular incident. You know, it's not about firepower. It's about people who are simply armed and willing to defend themselves. And in his particular case, there were four terrorists with fully automatic weapons who started by throwing grenades into a church of about 1,500 people. They'd picked a soft target. They'd picked a target, a church that was mostly white in an area that was very liberal. They figured people would not be armed there. That's what they said after the unrest in South Africa took a temporary hiatus and had a truth and reconciliation. Of course, things have started back up now in South Africa. But they had truth and reconciliation where they gave people pardons for talking about what they had done. It was coming out. And so these individuals who had created that attack said they thought they were being shot by multiple people from different directions because of what happened. We're going to have his excerpts from that interview that I did with him. Because at the time it came out, we were talking to people and we're trying to get people to understand how soft targets are in churches and how there needs to be people who are designated by the pastor, by other individuals. They don't need to make a big show of it. They don't need to have some kind of a weapons search of people coming in. They don't need to go full TSA. They don't need to do any TSA, as a matter of fact. But they should have some individuals in your church. If you don't have that, you should talk to your pastor about that. You should have some individuals who are trained and have licenses to conceal carry. And they should be there to protect the people who are coming to worship. And they should be guard dogs, quite frankly, for the pastor, for the flock. And so we're going to air excerpts of that, because this is something that people need to think about. Wherever you are, you need to think about this. There are soft targets everywhere. It's not just churches. But churches are especially soft targets. And that's why we had that interview a few years ago. So we're going to re-air parts of that, as well as the interview with Mark Collins, with Rob Dew. We're also going to have interviews with Lord Monckton. He has some amazing updates on what is happening with climate. I think he has broken the false model and exposed it of climate change. He has really gotten down to the science of this. So stay with us. It's going to be an amazing program. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Devin Patrick Kelly. That's his name. He got dishonorably discharged from the Air Force 3.5 years ago. He spent much of a year in the brig. But there's still conflicting reports about why he was kicked out of the military and imprisoned. But what we do know is this, according to his Facebook, according to his LinkedIn, and according to his high school and college acquaintances and friends, he was a SJW atheist who viciously hated Christians, particularly Southern Baptists. And ladies and gentlemen, on November 5th, just outside San Antonio, Texas, in Sutherland, great little town of good people, place I've traveled and ate lunch many times, he went into a church and began pumping bullets into men, women, and children, some of them as young as 2 years of age. You want to talk about vicious anti-Christian behavior. Remember what happened when Houston got flooded by the big hurricane a few months ago? Leftists across the board celebrated it and said it was an act of nature against evil Christian white conservatives. And of course, it was whites like Jennifer Lawrence that were pushing it when she wasn't down on her knees worshiping Harvey Weinstein and the rest of the scum. And we saw Charlie Hebdo, the satire publication in France, showing a bunch of flooded white people hailing Hitler in Houston. Didn't matter that Houston's 70% non-white. Didn't matter that this church was half non-white, a mixed church. Doesn't matter. They still celebrated all over Twitter, all over Facebook, and we know they celebrated. And we knew within 2 hours of this tragic event, we were on air live, myself, Paul Watson, Owen Schroyer, Rob Dew. We were all on the ground working, Travis Knight, covering the fact from Austin, but also from Sutherland, that he was an atheist SJW on his own LinkedIn page with a direct link to his Air Force record, the whole nine yards, talking about how he was an SJW, animal rights activist, atheist, and all the rest of it. And then Newsweek, within hours, came out and said that I was a liar and claimed that we fabricated this with no evidence. Well, guess what? Today, even CBS and the Daily Mail and everybody else has the same info we have, and it's confirmed. So here's the bottom line. They said they were launching this big revolution November 4th. And Saturday, we did a special live broadcast covering it. And I said, it looks like a dud. But I said, let's not celebrate this too much because there aren't a bunch of dead cops and a bunch of buildings burning, because we've seen what SJWs have done before and Black Lives Matter has done before and any means necessary. And I said, you look for these groups to have some lone wolves carry something out in the next few days or maybe even tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, it was completely obvious. He's wearing all black. He's dishonorably discharged, having guns illegally. He's a big atheist, an SJW. And the day after, couldn't go on a Saturday, Christians are in church on Sunday, he goes in on a Sunday morning to fix his eyes on those Christians like a vicious, horrible rat that he was, like the snake he was, to then pump rounds into little kids as young as six and 2 years of age. I challenge anybody to go to the Daily Mail's article that's linked up on InfoWars.com and look at that and look at the faces of those sweet families of white people and black people and Hispanic folks and quote, mixed families. They're all just human beings that bleed red blood. And then to think about this monstrous, demonic, horrible, evil person. And you know what? The left's always saying effing white males are the problem and effing white males are the evil and effing white males are inherently bad. The only place I see those demographics borne out and those statistics borne out is when it's SJWs and when it's the groups pushing for civil war. And absolutely, the ringleaders every single time are either effing white males, to use their terms, or effing white females. These are sickening, mentally ill people, as President Trump said this morning, who want power and who want control and see civilization turning against them and not accepting their propaganda and their garbage. So now they're panicking, and they want to try to push us all into submission. But they're smart enough like Vegas or like what we just saw in Texas, to not take credit for it openly because they want to blame the Second Amendment and even the firearm he chose at the very, very same time, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the globalists are going to push to take our Second Amendment now. But the bottom line is we have to keep our Second Amendment to defend ourselves, and all churches and all organizations that are Christian or conservative or pro-America are targets. And any place that people lovingly come together are targets for these demons. And that's why everyone needs to simply have security officers that are part of the church, that are already basically trained, that everybody trusts, that are low-key as the ushers, as the deacons, who wait out in the foyer during the church service, ready. There's already been countless examples of shooters going into churches and only getting to kill a couple people or shoot a couple people, and sometimes nobody, because they're off-duty police officers or armed ushers. And it's almost always leftist or jihadist. We've seen in Maryland and in Tennessee the last month, jihadis attack churches and kill and shoot people and almost no coverage. This is epidemic. We saw, you know, the car attack, the truck attack, and the media tried to say it was a truck that did it just last week, not a jihadi. I mean, this is happening constantly with the left and the jihadis that are their natural sympathizers coming after everybody. But the facts are in. He was a atheist, SJW, anti-free market, anti-Trump guy, just like the doctor that lived down the street from Rand Paul. We now learn Rand Paul has 4 to 5 broken ribs, may have punctured lungs, is in serious, serious condition. And his rich neighbor, the guy's much more wealthy than he is, it turns out, he's an inventor and a doctor, came over and attacked him, and on his own Facebook says, I hate Trump, I hate Rand Paul, I hate conservatives, I hate libertarians, I hate all the stuff that's going on in this country. You know, I love CNN, I love Colbert, I love Saturday Night Live. Same stuff that the Sutherland guy loves. He loves CNN. He loves it all. This is their army that they call for violence. They call for hashtag hunt Republicans. They call for get out there and go after them. And it's happening. And another mentally ill dirtbag who had a gun illegally is now going to be used to then try to take the guns and rights away from those of us who are the targets. So we're not putting up with it. We're exposing it here at InfoWars.com, from the black uniform he was wearing of Antifa to his background to who he targeted and when he did it, everything, the date, the background, the clothing, the MO, his history, the dishonorable discharge. All of it shows another dirtbag, leftist, crazy piece of garbage that wanted Christian and conservative blood, and by God, he got it. Well, guess what? He won't use the sacrifice of those dead people to take our rights collectively. And I salute the hero that pinned him down and shot him, the citizens that then drove him off the road. Great job. And that's the type of action we need. Texas strong. God bless you all, ladies and gentlemen. Back to David Knight and the live transmission that I'll be on today, 11 a.m. Central. But it was an Antifa globalist attack on America and what they see is the heart of our strength, places like Texas. InfoWars.com. Please spread the videos. We're in InfoWar. They're trying to spin this right now, but we're not going to let them. We've got all the articles, all the videos. We've got Rob Dew and Travis Knight on the ground. They're going to be reporting later here with David Knight and then later with me in studio today. InfoWars.com, NewsWars.com. Please stay with us.
All right, that was Alex Jones. We're going to be talking to Rob Dew as he here in studio. He's going to give us a breakdown as to what he saw there. We've got pictures that have not been released publicly yet. We're also going to have Mark Collins. He's an individual that you've seen here on InfoWars many times, dressed as George Washington. He is the spitting image of George Washington. I mean, he put his face next to George Washington, as he does on his site, and he educates children about the Founding Father, but he is a pastor also. And he was a temporary pastor there at that church. He knows those people. He went there to help. He's going to give us an update as to what's going on there. We're going to take a look at the reactions of the politicians, the celebrities, of course, calling for gun control. We're going to take a look at the heroes of this event, the people who shut this down. This is a story the mainstream media is not going to tell you about as they push for gun confiscation. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. We'll be right back. David Knight on this Monday, November 6, 2017, a very sad day after all the deaths that happened not too far from where we are here in Austin. And as people say, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims. What does that mean? You know, we pray for those who are struggling to survive, and we pray for those who will be struggling with the psychological damage of this. A young boy whose mother and sisters were shot and killed. He was shot four times. He's struggling to survive. He's going to struggle with those psychological issues as if he recovers. We pray for the families of those who lost their loved ones. But then our thoughts. What are our thoughts? Our thoughts, first of all, is there anything I can do to help if we live close by? But the second thing should be, what can we do to stop this? And I think we see this on both the left and the right, don't we? Now, the left always comes up with the solution, we need to make guns just go away. Let's just wish them into a cornfield. I just wish guns never existed. Well, whether or not that's the way you feel, that is not a practical solution. That is not a thought that is going to help, because that toothpaste is out of the tube. So like it or not, liberals, guns are here. They're here to stay. The question is, who's going to have them? Are they going to be the sole possessions of criminal lunatics or tyrannical governments? Or will we have the people armed to fight back? That's the question. And so we're going to talk today about the heroes who shot down this sick bastard, as the girlfriend of the man who chased him down, one of the heroes who chased him down, described him. And that is a good description of this guy. He is a sick bastard. We're going to take a look at him. We're going to take a look at the calls for gun control, the reactions of the press, the reactions of the Hollywood celebrities who think that they know better than we. They always call for the banning of the inanimate object. They never do apply this to an individual, do they? After we had the terror attack in New York, you know, there's been two terror attacks in New York. Neither of them have involved guns, have they? At 9/11, we had the one that just happened last week. But they don't, they haven't involved guns. So now the call is to let's ban cars from cities. That's what they're saying. That is not the solution. There are things that we can do to vet people. There's things that we can do to identify people who are at risk. And there was a lot of indications that this guy was a sick bastard. And so, you know, he should not have been able to get a gun. There's a lot of questions about how that happened. But let's talk about, what we can do to make sure that we protect our own and ourselves. That's the key issue that I think we need to take away from this, that the mainstream media and the politicians are not going to tell you. So we're going to talk about the heroes in this as well. I want to get President Trump's take on this. He's traveling, of course, in Asia, and he was asked about a couple of different questions, and they asked him a two-part question about North Korea, but then they asked him about the shooting, and here's what he had to say.
A question which is really the first part of your question. I think that mental health is your problem here. This was based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual, a lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse. But this is a mental health problem at the highest level. It's a very, very sad event. These are great people and a very, very sad event. But that's the way I view it.
Okay, that was President Trump traveling in Asia. To understand the scope of this, think about the fact that small town, Sutherland Springs, has only about 400 people, maybe a little bit less. So having 26 people killed, 20 injured, I mean, you're looking at a situation where about 6% of the town was killed. About another 5% was shot. Mark Collins is going to be joining us in the next hour. Mark Collins is somebody that you may know here from InfoWars. He lectures kids about George Washington. But he's also a pastor. He knows these people, and he's going to give us an update on what is going on in that community. He went there immediately as soon as he found out what was happening there. The gun was bought from Academy Sports and Outdoors, which is a large chain here in Central Texas. They have about 240 locations throughout the country. I know that they do background checks. They always run them. We've bought guns from them in the past. They run background checks. So the question is, how did this guy buy this gun? Because he was dishonorably discharged. The questions are, you know, when you talk about being dishonorably discharged for court-martial, and as we get information about this guy. It appears that he was jailed for a year because of assaulting and beating his wife and child, and then was dishonorably discharged. And the questions are, according to military law, they say, will I be able to own firearms? Federal and state laws do place restrictions on the purchase of firearms by those convicted of felonies like this. Many jurisdictions distinguish between violent and nonviolent offenses, but he was convicted of a violent offense. So the question is, as one individual says, a dishonorable discharge can only be handed down to an enlisted member by a general court-martial for what the military considers to be the most reprehensible conduct. This type of discharge may be rendered only by conviction at a general court-martial for serious offenses, for example, desertion, sexual assault, murder, etc., things that call for dishonorable discharge as part of the sentence. All veterans' benefits are lost regardless of any past honorable service. In many states, a dishonorable discharge is deemed the equivalent of a felony conviction with attendant loss of civil rights. U.S. federal law prohibits possession of firearms by those who have been dishonorably discharged per the Gun Control Act of 1968. So how did it get through the background checks that we have? And, of course, we have liberals who are calling not necessarily for background checks. They want to ban all guns. And remember, it was just last August, 3 months ago, that in Australia, where they banned guns, they confiscated the guns, they steamrolled the guns and crushed them. We just had a drive-by shooting in Australia. They didn't talk about that. Killed an individual, multiple shots, excuse me, but that's not talked about by the left. Now, there is a local connection. The shooter's Facebook page says that she is from Sutherland Springs. Her mother was pictured in previous photos at this particular church. So that's where his mother-in-law went. He and his wife were separated. He had a Ruger AR assault-type rifle. Now, this is always the boogeyman of the left. They always make this about firepower, don't they? The citizen who shot him, and I believe we'll find out, killed him. I think that he bled out. Shot him with a shotgun. This guy shows up with one of these assault-type rifles, according to Daily Beast, the things that strike fear into the hearts of liberals, and he has body armor on. But, of course, when you look at body armor, it has plates in the front, plates in the back, and those two plates are held together with straps on the side. So the man who showed up and took him down shot him on the side where he didn't have any body armor. They then chased him. And it appears that this guy bled out after a high-speed chase, but we will get confirmation of that from law enforcement. They haven't confirmed that yet. Law enforcement was not an issue in this. They did not get involved. And this is why we have to have armed citizens. I'm going to play later in the show parts of an interview that I had with an individual in South Africa who was in a church that was attacked. Guys came in with four fully automatic machine guns and grenades, and he stopped them with a five-shot 38. And you have to understand that it is not about the firepower. It's about people who are willing to stand up to these sick bastards. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to talk to our reporter, Rob Dew, who is on the scene. He traveled down yesterday to Sutherland Springs. He is there. He's attended press conferences that are going on there. He's reporting from the scene. I want to go to Rob right now. Tell us, Rob, what you have learned down there as you're reporting.
Well, obviously, the community is very small, is in shock. Behind me, over to my left, there, we had a candlelight vigil last night. But over my shoulder is the church, the First Baptist Church, where the shooting took place. Now, we did learn this morning that the shooter who stopped all the carnage, and apparently the original shooter, Mr. Kelly, had a hostage. But there was a man named Stephen Wilford who approached him with a shotgun, opened fire, hit him through the body armor at some point. And when they fled, they took a guy's truck. This citizen's name is Johnny Lingendorf. And so they both piled in the car and gave chase on this suspect and ran him off the road about 6 miles to the north of this location right now. We went to that location last night where they were towing the cars away. and to see what was going on. So there was two cars involved in that. They ran him off the road, and then he died, as I've been saying, like a dog in a ditch.
Yeah, yeah. Evidently, he might have bled out. Reports that I've seen say that the individual who shot him, and it appears that you know he shot him in the side where he doesn't have any body armor, that he had a shotgun. He got shot in the side with a shotgun. I would not be surprised to see the guy bleed out. Was he, as far as you know, was he hunting people down in the church? Because the reports that I've seen, like this one young child shot multiple times, four times, this one young boy.
Well, and that's the connection seems to be he taught Bible school for a while back in 2013. His mother-in-law went to this church. They also reported that his ex-wife slash girlfriend had gone to this church. So they're not even sure if he was still married at this point. But so there is some connection to this church because people are asking, why would he come all the way here from New Braunfels if, you know, for no reason? It seems kind of out of the way to target this church. You wouldn't notice it if you were driving along this road, this Highway 87. You wouldn't even notice the town, much less. There's really no stoplight. There's a blinking yellow light and a post office. There's not much here. So there has to be some sort of connection, and now we see that there is a family connection to this church. And he'd also in recent years been preaching atheism to his friends. In fact, so many were taking to Facebook saying they'd stop being friends with him because of all the atheist Facebook posts. So he seems to have just a run of bad, not bad luck, but bad behavior. He got kicked out of the Air Force for assaulting his then wife and girlfriend.
So, yeah, and the child as well. So they put him in prison and then kicked him out. And I guess that, you know, you talked about the connection there to Sutherland Springs, his wife being from there, his mother-in-law attending that church. And clearly, if he's going to beat his wife and children severely enough to be thrown into prison, then he's got an axe to grind with the family. That would explain why he was there. And I would say, too, as we look at this, he put it on his LinkedIn that he taught vacation Bible school for a month. Anybody knows about vacation Bible schools? Those are typically about 4 or 5 days. You usually do that like Monday through Friday during the summer. And he was an assistant there. I mean, this is a guy who, when he talks about children and so forth after having beaten his child, I wouldn't be surprised if this guy was there trying to, as a pedophile. He certainly wasn't somebody that was a Christian. He was an adamant atheist, as you mentioned, Rob. People had blocked him on Facebook because he was so adamant about it. What do we know his weapon?
I want to get to this first because this happened during the press conference yesterday. One of the first questions asked, and this was a man who was holding a seat for an NPR guy up at the front row. This guy's sitting there. He gets up and moves to the back at some point, and he gets in the first or second question, and you can probably hear it on my recording that we made. We did a live stream for the press conference. He yells, was this man known to have any affiliations with militia groups? So he said, is this man known to have any affiliations with militia groups? Like, immediately, it was the militia's fault. Yeah. And people kind of looked back at him like, who is this guy? And then I went up to him and confronted him afterward. I said, did you ask that question because he was white? And he's sitting there tweeting. He was white. And he walked away. Total chill plan. And it's appalling that that type of behavior is taking place to, we didn't even know his name at that point, which is interesting. I guess ABC News had reported his name. But at the press conference, they weren't giving out his name yet. They were still holding on that.
Yeah, well, you know, CNN and the local congressman, I think, Vicente Gonzalez, I think he's a U.S. congressman. I'm not sure if he's U.S. or state congressman. They'd put it out as Sam Hyde, which is an internet meme. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, what they did in terms of that press conference that you're just talking about, throwing out militia. We've also seen celebrities saying Republicans. The NRA has got blood on its hands. The NRA doesn't have any blood on its hands. This individual has blood on his hands. And, it was a gun owner who stopped this. The police were nowhere around. The police didn't get there until 6 or 7 minutes after this guy died in the ditch. So that's the issue. Just like the shooter that I interviewed in South Africa, he says it's better to have a gun in your hand than a cop on the phone. They can't be everywhere to protect everybody. That's why we have to have
firearms. We saw that in the Tennessee shooting, too. The Tennessee shooting, he was stopped by an usher with a gun. That guy couldn't go any further. So I think what you're going to see is the trend of which is a good trend, by the way, I think, of more ushers and people who work in the church system becoming concealed carry holders, having that ability to carry inside the church. And I think it's going to keep people safer.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the reasons why This man from South Africa wrote the book, was to encourage people in America, said the day is coming when this is going to happen in America. Now, we've seen it happen a couple of times. They're very soft targets. There needs to be somebody designated to protect individuals and not do it in a confrontational way. I mean, it can be done very, very easily. So we're going to play some clips of that later. But Rob, did you learn anything about his firearms? Because the question in my mind is he's served time in jail in the military for beating his wife and his child. Then he was dishonorably discharged, which, you know, is kind of a felony type of thing. And typically under federal law and Texas law, it seems he would be barred from purchasing a rifle. And yet there are reports that he was able to purchase this rifle from Academy Sports. And I know they do background checks.
They do. And apparently I talked to a source in within the government who said the version that he was court-martialed, but and I don't have it in front of me right now, but whatever he was delineated as, they call it a bucket full of chicken is what their term for it is. But that means you can still, it's not listed as a class B felony, which I believe keeps you from getting a firearm. I'll have to look that up. I'll do a report on that, because that was interesting. How did this guy, how was he able to get a firearm if he was court-martialed? Because we were hearing on the internet that, oh, if you're court-martialed, there's no way you can get a firearm. Maybe there is a loophole in that. Who knows? But it was a Ruger AR-15. He apparently showed it off on Facebook before, a couple days before this killing. Also shaved his beard on Halloween. So at some point, he had decided he was going to go through with this. And obviously, there's some mental illness involved. You look at this church back here. This is small town America. This is not where you would see, you would not expect to see any type of crime here. We talked to some people last night, a young man, a guy who owns a body shop down the road, says we leave our doors unlocked. This is a safe place to be. And obviously, it can happen anywhere. And people need to be aware of their surroundings. They need to be aware of when people start acting different. Because as we see, we've now had two of the most deadliest shootings in just this past month.
Well, you know, when we look at this guy, and the left always likes to focus on tools. We heard after the New York City terror attack last week, said, got to ban cars from cities. And they always focus on weapons. And, of course, the assault-type weapon, like an AR, is the thing that frightens them the most. And yet the guy who stopped this, the hero, used a shotgun. So maybe Joe Biden was right. Get a shotgun instead of an AR. But seriously, I mean, you cannot protect yourself from crazy people. I mean, there are people who are kidnapping individuals and murdering them using any kind of implement. The question is, when you have crazy individuals like this, can we have the tools available to protect ourselves? That's really the only issue that is involved here. All right, stay with us, Rob Dew, and we're going to be right back to him. He is in Sutherland Springs reporting on the situation there live. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. David Knight on this Monday, November the 6th, 2017. We're talking to Rob Dew, who is on location in Sutherland Springs, Texas, the site of a horrendous shooting yesterday at a church. As I mentioned before, it killed about 6% of the town's population, a very small town, with 26 people being killed. Another 5% were shot and injured and fighting for their life. So this has been a horrific event for that community, not just that church. Everybody is going to be touched by that in that community. Rob Dew is there on site, and we're going to be talking to someone else who has gone there to help, somebody who was a temporary pastor there in the past. Mark Collins is going to be giving us an update as well. Before we get back to Rob, I just want to remind you of some of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a sale on DNA Force now reduced by 25%. That is a big dollar savings on DNA Force. We still have Super Male Vitality reduced 30% off, Anthroplex 50% off, and you can get Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine or Biotrue Selenium 40% off. You can also get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix with the code at checkout VITA10, VITA10. That's 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. Rob, when I'm looking at what the media is doing, they were quick to label him as a Bible school teacher. Just as you pointed out in the press conference, they had a individual holding a spot for NPR so they could go down and ask if he was a militia member. So they're very anxious to put him out there as a conservative Christian. And yet his social media, before the government shut that down and started deleting the stuff, we saw that out of people have taken some screenshots, and out of 10 groups that he liked on Facebook, four of the 10 were atheist-oriented. One of them was a psychic medium that he was following. The causes, as Paul Joseph Watson tweeted out, that he likes were animal welfare, arts and culture, children. Oh, yeah, he likes children. He went down the aisles shooting them multiple times. Civil rights, social action, environment, health, and human rights. Does he sound like a conservative with his environmental and social action, arts and culture stuff to you? Oh, I think we don't have any audio there. Oh, there we go. Now, start over again, Rob. We had lost audio there for a second. Go ahead. We got you now.
It sounds like a person who's consumed with what the left likes to preach. Social justice, everybody's a victim. Obviously, he felt he was so victimized enough, he wanted to take a gun. And, yeah, like you mentioned, there's one kid right now, one little child, I believe he's 8 years old, shot four times with an AR-15 and still alive in surgery right now.
Yes, yes. Horrific. And of course, as you mentioned, many people who knew him from high school characterized him as creepy, crazy, and weird. They said they had to block him because he was such an evangelist for atheism. He wouldn't leave people alone. One individual said he was the first atheist I met. Another who went to school with him said I was in complete shock. I just had deleted him off of Facebook because I couldn't stand his posts. Another one said I removed him off of Facebook for the same reason. He was being super negative all the time, always preaching about atheism, always attacking Christians verbally until he began to attack them with his gun.
Yeah, a very sick individual. I think you're going to find he was probably on prescription drugs. I mean, if he believed in psychics, it just boggles the mind that somebody like that could, you watch this progression going from being in the Air Force, wanting to serve his country, but getting kicked out, and then the fall going to leading up to this church killing. I mean, totally sick individual, preaching atheism. None of his friends had all disowned him, so he had nothing left, apparently.
Let me ask you if there's been an update in terms of determining the cause of death for this guy. Have they said that he bled out from the shotgun wound to his side?
The New York Post was reporting this morning, and we were waiting for the sheriff because he was supposed to give a press conference earlier over on site here, was that he did actually shoot himself after he crashed the car. But it was the work of those two individuals, Johnny Langendorf and Stephen Wilford, who actually, Mr. Wilford confronted the shooter with a shotgun. They gave chase. In fact, turn around, Travis, you can see the road. They went right down this way, straight north on 539, about 5-6 miles from here. And then right at the county line is where they were able to run him off the road. They said they were going upwards of 95 miles an hour during this chase.
Hmm. So they're now saying that he pulled over and shot himself. You said that he had a hostage with him. Is that correct?
That is what is being reported, that he had a hostage. Oh. They didn't mention that yesterday in the briefing. But and according to Mr. Langendorf's girlfriend's Facebook post, where he, interestingly, a citizen journalist is putting out news, she wrote her boyfriend chased the guy. He saw him die within feet of him. And they didn't mention whether he'd committed suicide, but they did mention there was a hostage there. And they did make sure before they drew their rifles on the car that the hostage was clear.
Hmm, that's interesting. So, and of course, the individual that you're talking about, Langendorf, he was the one who was driving the car. He said he pulled up there. He saw these two shooting at each other. And then the killer ran off. And this guy came to him and told him what the situation was and got in his car. And the two of them chased him down after the killer had been shot by the man who showed up. Yeah.
There were two heroes that day. Those are the two heroes who stepped up, put themselves in harm's way, put their body, their life on the line without, just being asked, apparently, coming to the call of God. Mr. Wilford apparently heard about this from his daughter, said there was people shooting at the church. And so he grabbed his gun and just went there. He didn't wait. He didn't stand around and go, well, what should I do? Should I call the police? Should I duck and cover? No, he went to stop the guy.
That's right. That's right. That's a real act of heroism right there. And fortunately,
truly is.
He was able to stop it. Didn't think twice. Was not at that church. As soon as he was told, he grabbed his rifle and went to stop it. And that's what the left wants to shut down. Our ability to be able to protect ourselves, because we can't know every crazy person everywhere. And you know, people go off the rails, even though there have been warning signs typically for individuals. They do go off the rails. So are we going to be helpless and dependent on the police, who it takes a long time for them to get there, or are we going to be able to protect ourselves? That's the question. And that's what we're going to have to fight for. And that's something that people who are in soft targets, churches especially, as we said before, they're going to have to think about this. And they're going to need to take measures to protect themselves and to protect others.
Yeah, when seconds count, as they say, police are minutes away. And I mean, and this is just another, you look at the mainstream media that's lined up here. Lots of big cars, cameras, they're setting stuff up. We're running this on an iPhone right now. So we're a lot more nimbler. We can go to different locations. We were one of the few groups that were at the crash site last night because they weren't putting that out on any press releases of where it was. They were trying to keep that area locked down. And they actually had four different roads blocked off when we arrived there. So they were keeping that area locked. They didn't want people around. There was just one other news crew that had made it over there. But they weren't saying where the location was. We just kind of figured it out through through different things that some of the law enforcement officials were saying.
Great work there. Did they say anything about how long this shooting went on?
From what I'm gathering, it was less than 5 minutes. So what they're saying is...
Still, that's a tremendous amount of time when you got a guy walking around shooting people that are unarmed.
Oh, yeah.
He's got, yeah.
Exactly. And they believe he reloaded at least twice. So he went into the church, or shot from the back of the church, then went around to the right side of the church, and then he went inside. So he was actually outside for a majority of the shooting. Then he went inside and kept shooting, and then when he came out is when he was confronted by Mr. Wilford with a shotgun.
Oh, that's amazing. And we don't know at this point in time, we haven't had any confirmation that he did have a hostage except for, and I guess the girlfriend of the guy who was driving the car, the two individuals who tracked him down, I guess she would know, but we don't know who that individual is that was taken hostage or why.
Correct, not at this point. And it was interesting. It took a while for Stephen Wilford's name to come out.
Yes.
But Mr. Langendorf was giving interviews, and he's sort of, I wouldn't say soaked up the hero status, but he's been telling people what's been going on. So
yeah,
he has given a couple news interviews, but we have not seen him this far.
And we're grateful for that. I mean, you know, the problem is, as we typically see in a situation like this, the government comes in and tries to suppress all information. And the public wants to know. There's not a question as to whether or not there was somebody assisting him. The person that has been identified, tracked down, and killed by people who responded to the scene, that's over with. So we ought to be able to get that information from these people. So I'm grateful to the fact that the man who was driving the pursuit car, one of the two heroes, that he's been forthcoming and talking to people, and that his girlfriend is giving information out, because we can't get anything from the officials. They always put a gag on everything. So it's great that you're there, Rob, and it's super that you were able to track down that information, and you're going to be staying there for a while with updates, I assume.
That's correct. Right. In fact, as soon as we get done with your show, we're going to just go live on Facebook and do a long form report of what we've been learning throughout the days here in Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Thank you very much. That's Rob Dew. He's in Sutherland Springs, Texas, and he will be having more reports on Infowars.com. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight, and we're going to be breaking down more information about this shooting in the next segment. At the top of the hour here, we're going to cover some other news. Rand Paul has suffered 5 fractured ribs after being attacked by a neighbor. He was mowing his grass on his own property. How many senators do you know that mow their own grass? Rand Paul was blindsided, attacked from the back. He suffered 5 rib fractures, including 3 displaced fractures. a very, very painful situation, and it can lead to very dangerous complications if those ribs puncture your lungs. That has not taken place yet, but it is going to impact his work. And I can tell you that my wife had a bad fall on the stairs once and broke three ribs in the back like that, getting hit from behind. It can take a very long time to recover. It is extremely, extremely painful. He said this type of injury is caused by high velocity, severe force. It's not clear exactly how soon he will return to work, as the pain is considerable, as is the difficulty in getting around, including flying. So not clear as to the motives of the individual who attacked him, other than the fact that we know that the guy is a liberal Democrat. Perhaps that had something to do with it, if not being the primary motivation. Meanwhile, we see a memo actually leaked to support the information that Donna Brazile has been telling us about the Democrat Party. And I find it interesting that we have this memo leaked internally from the DNC. And this is the second one that we've had leaked in the last week. The previous one being somebody leaking some information about an IT manager who said, we've got to hire some staff, but don't even bother to submit applications about white, straight, cisgender men. In other words, men who are not transgender. I guess, you know, if you're identifying as a man, even if you are white and straight, that would be okay for them. I don't know if that's straight or not. But anyway, that type of identity politics, saying we've got to be ready to compete in everything from president to dog catcher. But first of all, we have to have identity politics. But the key thing, besides what is revealed in these memos about the Democrat Party and the fact, as Donna Brazile has been telling us, this nomination wasn't stolen. It was bought with stolen money. This is Hillary Clinton. She essentially bought the DNC. They had run themselves into massive tens of millions of dollars of debt under Obama. Then she came in with a war chest of stolen money and bought them out. And that's what the memo tells us. Now, as we see these two memos leaked by disgruntled insiders of the DNC, they still want to tell us that if we say that the initial DNC leaks were from an insider, as we were told by a former UK ambassador who came to the US, he said, to get those leaks, as we've been told by William Binney that it was not possible for some of these files that they say were hacked by Russians, it was not possible for that to have happened based on the size of the files and the amount of time that it took to transfer them. So don't listen to WikiLeaks who say this is not from a state actor. Don't listen to the UK ambassador who said, I actually received these files from an insider who was disgruntled. Don't listen to the former technical head of the NSA. As a matter of fact, if you say that those people are telling the truth, then you're a conspiracy theorist. You need to get on board with the conspiracy theory that came out from Hillary Clinton and is still being sold, by the way, by Donna Brazile, saying the Russians hacked this. They didn't want you to look at the information. It was a diversionary tactic. That's why they did that. And that's why Twitter shut down half of the tweets that had a hashtag DNC leaks. They did not want you to see what was leaked. They wanted you to only focus on their phony conspiracy theory that the Russians had hacked this. I think these two leaks that came out in this last week are very instructive. Meanwhile, we say very quickly here, there's a U.S. journalist, 25 years old, thrown into a Zimbabwe jail, looking at 25 years in prison for tweeting about the long-term dictator there, Mugabe, who is now 93 years old. This is what Marxism looks like. And this is what we have to understand when we're talking about this kind of totalitarian regime that we see taking over in parts of the world. Quite frankly, the Democrats who want to take over everything in your life, who want to ban and control everything about your life, understand that gun control is people control, writ large. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November the 6th, 2017. We've been talking about the horrific shooting that took place yesterday, not too far from Austin, in Sutherland Springs. Rob Dew is reporting live from there, giving us updates as information comes out. I'm not going to talk anymore about this sick hate-filled murder. I want to talk about the heroes who stopped it. And understand that you don't have to wear a uniform to be able to stop a shooter. Not in an America where we have the right to defend ourselves and to defend other people. And that's the way that it should be. No matter how good the police are, they can't be everywhere. As we pointed out before, a gun in your hand is worth a lot more than a cop on the phone. And this underscores this extensively. This guy was there for 5-6 minutes shooting and killing people. That is an eternity. That is an eternity when a guy is armed with an AR and walking up and down the aisles killing people. And it was an individual who ran and got his rifle as he was talking, told that this was happening. He did not attend that church. He got his rifle. He ran to the situation and shot him, caused him to flee. Another individual carried him in his truck, and they chased him. I want to play the recount here from the driver, Langendorf, who gave his account of what happened. Here's that clip.
I pulled up on the intersection, and I saw the shooter coming from the cars, actually, right outside the church that were parked. His vehicle was parked, door open, engine running, and him and the neighbor across the street were both cut about the same time, exchanging fire. And as he came up, I never got a look at him. I never really saw him. I saw the gunfire. The shooter got in his truck. The gentleman in the with the rifle came to my truck as the shooter took off, and he briefed me quickly on what had just happened and said that we had to get him, and so that's what I did. I was on the phone with dispatch the entire time. As far as I could see, Wilson County police were all headed to the church, and on 539 I did not see any police, and so I gave them the direction we were going on, what road and everything, and that, you know, the vehicle was in sight, and I was picking up, getting closer and closer. We just take pursuit. We speed over 87 through traffic, and we, like I said, we hit about 95 going down 539 trying to catch this guy until he eventually lost control on his own and went off in the ditch. He just hurt so many people, and he just affected so many people's lives. Why wouldn't you want to take him down?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you want to take him down? And they were the ones who were on the scene. Remember, the shooting went on for 5 or 6 minutes. These individuals, as you just heard, they chased him down at high speed. And he said in another interview, he said eventually he just came to kind of a slowdown. And after that, we got to within a few feet of him, and he got off the road. It's just like he gave up, he said. He went off in the ditch. He hit a hay bale, from what I could see. And then he just never moved after that. He didn't get out. He didn't try anything. He hit the ditch, and the gentleman that was with me got out, rested his rifle on my hood, and kept it aimed at him, telling him to get out, said Mr. Langendorf. There was no movement. There was none of that. The guy didn't put up a fight or anything. The two men remained at the site of the crash until the police showed up, which is, again, another 5 to 7 minutes later. So he's able to shoot for 5 to 7 minutes. The police are getting calls of what is happening. They get there as quickly as they can. Meanwhile, the guy has already gone. Meanwhile, these individuals have already stopped the attack, and that was Stephen Williford, who grabbed a rifle, went there, got involved in a shot, an exchange of shots with him, and shot him evidently in the side. That's what they're saying. He had a shotgun. The other individual had an AR-15. The killer had the AR-15, and the man who stopped him had a shotgun. I mean, if you're going to look at superior firepower, certainly in stopping power, the shotgun is going to be superior, but not a very accurate weapon, and doesn't have a very fast rate of fire. But it's the left's favorite call to ban the assault rifle, and yet it was an inferior weapon that stopped this attack. And even though the guy had body armor, he knew to shoot him in the side where he did not have any body armor. I think that is the takeaway here. We have to understand that the police did not get to the church until well after the individuals are gone. And even as these people are telling where they are and that they're driving, it still took them another 5 to 7 minutes to get to the scene of where the car had crashed and the man was either dead or had bled out from the initial shotgun blast. To me, that is the issue here. We've got two heroes who stop the fight and who kill the individual. Now, that was conducting the murder. I want to go back to an interview that I did with another hero who also stopped a church attack. This was a situation in South Africa. There were 11 people that were killed. I believe it was 58 people that were wounded. In this particular attack, he was visiting the church. He had had incidents in the past where he had carried handguns. We're going to play that for you. But the bottom line that you have to understand is that this was an attack that began with hand grenades being thrown into a church of about 1,500 people. It's a very large church. And they also had fully automatic assault rifles in the liberals' terminology. They had fully automatic rifles. And this is a guy who only had a .38 revolver with five shots. And he stopped that attack. I want you to hear what he said as they were coming in. His first impressions as the attack began.
Well, right at the front door of the church where everybody could see right next to the stage, there was a noise. And I thought, you know, these people should really come in at the back door. They shouldn't make such a big scene at the front. And these terrorists stepped in to the congregation. And it was interesting because I had thought that there was a play taking place. And it's only when they started opening up fire with their automatic assault rifles and they lobbed the grenades into the congregation, and I saw the effects of the rifle shooting where wood was actually shooting out of the benches, splinters were shooting up into the air, that I realized this was not a show or a play that was taking place, that this was a serious terrorist attack on the congregation.
All right, now I want to play. Let's go ahead and play that next clip because he talks about how you have to process this, and you have to understand what's really happening, and then listen to what he says happened as the people were trying to avoid the shooter.
It takes a couple of, I don't want to say a couple of seconds, it's probably a split second to realize what's going on, but it's almost like your brain and your eyes are trying to communicate with each other that this is reality, and it's not a game, it's not a play, and you need to react accordingly.
Exactly. Now, once you realized something was this was really happening, what did you do at that point?
We went down onto the ground as low as possible. Everybody ducked down. They tried to get as low as possible below the benches, underneath the benches, and tried to keep their heads down. It was interesting because some people, for instance, one little girl, she just froze. She couldn't move. And her little friends next to her, Richard O'Keel, who was 17, and another young friend, they went down onto the ground. And so Richard was concerned about the little one sitting up, and he knelt on his knees and went up into the air to pull her down onto the ground. And as he went up, he took a bullet in the back of the head, trying to save her life. And another young man, Gerard Harker, is 21 years old. He had a hand grenade land in the aisle next to him, and he fell on top of the grenade with his full body and took a full blow to himself to try and protect the people around him. And his younger brother sitting next to him was also killed in the incident. I went down like everybody else, and I pulled out a .38 special little snub-nose revolver, commonly known as a Saturday Night Special. And I knelt behind the bench in front of me, and I took two shots at the attackers.
All right, let's hold it there because we've got to go to a break, and we're going to continue with that compelling story, and we're going to tell you what happened to this guy in his thinking, because he was a Christian, he was a missionary, and he had to think about whether or not he should arm himself to defend other people, and it's a blessing on that day that he did. You heard the people who were sacrificing themselves, the individual who jumped on the grenade to save the people around him. That is heroism. And we have people who are willing to do that. We just need to make sure they're not unarmed. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November the 6th, 2017. We're going to go back and play some more of the hero who shut down a mass shooting. It was a church that was attacked by four terrorists with fully automatic weapons and grenades. They began by spraying the crowd and throwing grenades in, and this individual stopped the attack with just a .38 snub-nose revolver, shooting from the back of a very large auditorium. You're going to hear this amazing story in just one moment, and how these types of tales of heroism, he wrote a book about it because he wanted churches to understand
how they were soft targets. And we've now had a couple of church attacks here. This is a message that everyone needs to hear. Whether you are a Christian in a church or not, you need to understand the importance of self-defense and make sure that you do not allow the ignorant and hateful left to take that right away from you. That is a God-given right protected by our Constitution. No law should be allowed to infringe upon that. We've got a lot of laws that are unconstitutionally infringing on our God-given right to protect ourselves right now. But we're going to get back to that in just a moment. You know, we see a lot of censorship, as I was talking about earlier. We had Twitter has banned many individuals. Roger Stone, they banned President Trump for a short period of time, a rogue employee, they say. But this is something that they've been doing quite a bit. We know they've now admitted that they censored information about the DNC leaks, hashtag DNC leak. 48% of those were shut down. When the Podesta emails came out, they shut down a quarter of those. They don't want the information to get out. And so Twitter has been working hand in glove with the Democrats to divert, to hide that information. We've got YouTube demonetizing people, blocking ads are being served. See, there's an economic censorship as well. And that's why the products that you buy at InfoWarsStore.com are so important. It helps us to stay independent of this. We sell these directly to you at InfoWarsStore.com, and they're great products that help you and your family to protect your health. We offer some of our most popular products we have now at a very large discount. We've had Biome Defense, which is live probiotic cultures from 23 different strains. That's been out of stock for a while. We brought it back and put it on sale, 25% off. That's InfoWars Life Biome Defense. We also have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine and BioTrue Selenium. Both of those, 40% off. At 50% off, we have Winter Sun, our vitamin D supplement, as well as Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver product. And you can get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. It's a great way to be able to take a baseline of important vitamins and minerals without swallowing a lot of pills. It's a great tasting drink mix. You can now get it 10% off entering the coupon code VITA10 at checkout. That's VITA10, V-I-T-A-10 at checkout to get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. All right, we heard part of what Charles Van Vick was saying. Again, he is a Christian. He was visiting this church. Later on, they learned that these individuals said they targeted that church because they didn't think anybody there would be armed. And we're going to talk about the struggle that he himself had as a Christian as to whether or not he should be armed, whether or not he could shoot someone to defend innocent life. I want to pick back up with what he was saying in terms of how surprised and startled you are once something happens like this. It takes a little bit of time to process that. And as he said, many people had ducked down, but there was one little girl who was still just standing up and not doing anything. As one individual got on his knees to pull her down, he was shot in the head, and here's where we pick it up again.
Trying to save her life.
Oh.
And another young man, Gerard Harker, is 21 years old. He had a hand grenade land in the aisle next to him, and he fell on top of the grenade with his full body and took a full blow to himself to try and protect the people around him. And his younger brother sitting next to him was also killed in the incident. I went down like everybody else, and I pulled out a .38 special little snub-nosed revolver, commonly known as a Saturday Night Special, and I knelt behind the bench in front of me, and I took two shots at the attackers. The challenge was that I was sitting about fourth row from the back of the church, and as I mentioned, it's a big 1,500-seater hall that we were in.
Yeah.
And I just realized, I took two shots and I realized I'm far too far away from the attackers. I'm going to have to try and get in behind them at close range. So I went down onto my haunches. We call it leopard crawl, down on the ground, crawling to the aisle. And I ran out the back door of the church. I had to kick the doors open. And I thought, I'll come in behind the attackers in the front of the church. I'll come in behind them at the door that they entered. And as I ran out the back of the church and I was coming around the corner, the terrorists were already standing at the getaway car. So in a couple of seconds that I had to kick the doors open and run round, they already had left the church. And what I didn't realize at that time was that inside the church, with one of my two shots from way back, fourth row from the back of the church, I'd actually hit one of them on the hand. And so they knew there was fire coming from the congregation at them, And so they ran out, but they didn't drive away immediately. When I came running around the corner, one of them was standing at the back left door of the car, and he had his rifle, automatic rifle, on his hip, pointing up to the sky, and he was looking at the door they had come out of. And all I could think was that he was expecting me to come running out of that door because somebody was shooting at them, and he would have just loaded his rifle and blown me away. But by God's grace, I was behind them, and so I took another three shots at them, and they jumped in the car and drove off. And it was due to the blood from his hand that where I hit him inside the church that got onto the car seats. And so through forensics, the police managed to trace him and arrest him, one of the four.
Wow. All right, we've got just a little bit of time left. We won't be able to play this full clip. We have Mark Collins joining us in the next segment. But I want to continue with an excerpt from this interview. And again, we're going to post this on Real News with David Knight. You can see the full report. It is very important for you to understand this man's experience. Let's talk about his journey, about how he got to this situation where he was got over the idea that he should carry a gun to protect himself and others. God's providence that you were able to stop this with just a 38 and five shots. But you were the man that God used. Tell us how you came to carry a 38 with you to church.
David, a long time before that, I was traveling with a friend near a little town called Wellington outside of Cape Town. We were going through to his parents' farm, and I was driving a small little pickup, very small little vehicle. And all of a sudden, there were tires burning in the streets of the car, and that was the African National Congress, which was Nelson Mandela's political party. They were burning tires in the road, and as my car came to a standstill, they started throwing rocks and bricks at our vehicle and rocking the vehicle with these bricks that were smashing the windows and denting the vehicle. So that was what happened then, and after that, I made the decision to purchase a firearm, and the next time my life was threatened, to use it to protect myself and my family. But it was a long walk for me. I'm telling a quick story in a few minutes, It was a long theological issue for me as a Christian, whether I could carry a firearm in civilian life and then use it to defend myself.
Okay, let's hold it right there. We got to take a break. We come back. I'm going to try to play just a little bit of that. And let him finish his long theological walk. He summarizes that people need to understand you have a moral obligation and a duty to protect innocent life. Stay with us. We'll be right back. My name is David Knight, and we'll be talking to Mark Collins, who is there on the scene.
In Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Mark Collins, a man who bears an uncanny resemblance to George Washington in both physical appearance and, I would say, in character. And interestingly enough, he is the pastor of Yorktown Baptist Church. Now, as I said earlier in the broadcast, many people have said our thoughts and prayers are with the victims, and yes, they are. But when we talk about our thoughts, our thoughts are very different than the left. The left, we all want to see the same end. We want to see this stopped, or at the very least minimized, because it's not a perfect world. We're not going to be able to stop all violence. Having guns is against the law for felons, but sometimes they can get them by other means. Frequently they do. We want to make sure that it's not only the bad guys who are armed. And so if we can't stop all violence, how do we minimize this? This is what we're looking at. But the other part of the thought is how can we help the individuals there? Now, Mark Collins has connections to this particular church, and he is there to help the members of this community. A massive tragedy in this very small town of less than 400 people. More than 6% of the people were killed, and another 5% were injured. So joining us now is Mark Collins. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Collins.
David, it's so good to be with you again.
Tell us a little bit about, and I appreciate you coming on at the very last minute here. I know that this has been a heart-wrenching situation for you because you do have a close relationship with the people here. Tell us a little bit about that relationship and how that's gone back through the years.
Well, when we moved to Texas 20 years ago, we moved to Sutherland Springs. And I was part of that church for 15 years. I was the associate pastor for 11 and a half of those years. Mm. And I helped serve with Frank. Frank's one of my dearest friends in the world. He is the pastor. Fortunately or unfortunately, he was out of town in Oklahoma City for some training. And his chairman of deacons was sharing the word that morning when the tragedy struck.
And he and his wife, the pastor and his wife, were both out of town. Their daughter, their 14-year-old daughter, was there, and she was killed, right?
She was being babysat. Annabelle's a precious young lady. She had kind of special needs. And so she was being watched by one of the church members who unfortunately also lost her life.
I'm so sorry. And I know that, especially that church, everybody in that church essentially was, there's about 50 people in the church. Is that correct? Was everybody either shot or killed that was in the church at the time?
Very few walked out unscathed. Everybody was, you know, shrapnel at a minimum, just about everyone that was there. I think one young man was able to actually escape. He was athletic enough and was able to get out and run across. He was the one that called 911 initially.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you know anything? There's been reports by the Langendorf, the individual who was driving the car, where they the one man showed up and he got engaged in a firefight, shot the killer, and then they pursued him in the car. And the individual who was driving the car, Langendorf's girlfriend, said that there was a hostage in the car. Do you know anything about that?
I have not heard anything about that at all.
Okay. All right.
I was not aware of that.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you know in terms of the community there, in terms of how they're coping with this. As you said, pretty much everybody that was in the church at the time was shot or injured in one way, with just a couple of exceptions.
Yes, one of the most devastating. One family lost 8 members of their family, and I believe 5 of those members were children.
Oh my goodness.
And so, yeah, just David, it's unbelievable. But it was really amazing to see our little community come together in the communities. You know, Texas is a community.
Yes.
And literally folks from all over the state were pouring in to take care of things in every way, fashion, form. Whether you're Baptist or Lutheran or Catholic or nothing, they were here for each other.
Yes.
And so it was really beautiful to see that.
And, of course, it began with the two heroes, the one man who, as he heard there was a shooting, he didn't hesitate. He grabbed his rifle and ran to the scene to stop the shooting. And then the individual who put him in the car and said, let's go chase him. I mean, those two guys. Do you know those two individuals?
Yes, I do. And they truly are heroes. I tell you, the individual that engaged in gunfire with the perpetrator, his only regret is his gun was locked in his gun safe and didn't have a live round in it. And it took him those precious extra seconds while he had to listen to the perpetrator go through. I believe I counted 15 or 16 magazines on the grass in front of the church.
Oh, wow.
So he actually, he just shot through the walls and through the doors, basically softening up the scene before he went in. And started attacking on the inside. But
he circled the building, just firing magazine after magazine into the building, and then he went into the building and started going up and down the aisles shooting people. Is that?
Yeah, there was just one center aisle. Yeah.
Mm.
So very sad, very sad, and pretty stressful situation for all involved. You know, you can imagine.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can imagine. It's absolutely horrific to see that. Good, of course, I know that you're with us in terms of your understanding of the Second Amendment, about our God-given rights to protect ourselves. You know how this was stopped. The police would have stopped it if they could, but they couldn't get there quickly enough, and that's why we have a right of self-protection. Your comments on the rush to gun control from politicians and celebrities.
You know, isn't it amazing? If you look at, I've heard a lot of folks, I was just listening to some of the media outlets as some of these reporters were just thinking, you know, wow, we just really need to stop people from owning guns. And, mm-hmm. and if you think the there's some debate, but let's say the average they say the average response time of police is 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to stop a bad man with an AR-15 is a good man with an AR-15, and that's exactly what played out.
That's right. Or even with an inferior weapon. I mean, many people would argue that the shotgun, for most cases, this is a guy who was armed as the left and always is concerned about full military type weapons, right? He had what they would call an assault weapon, an AR. He had body armor, and yet one brave individual with a shotgun took him out, stopped that attack. And this is a very small town, and yet, as people said, it took 5-7 minutes before the police got there, and then he was long gone. And they were on the phone with the police saying, we're chasing him, and here's where he is. And even after he crashed into the ditch and subsequently died, the police, it was another 5 to 7 minutes before the police got there. That tells us that we have to have the ability to protect ourselves and to protect others, doesn't it, Mark?
Yes, they are there to do their best, but really most of the time they're filling out a report on what went down. And so it's really up to us in most scenarios to be able to protect ourselves, in those situations. So, and by the way, it was an AR-15 against an AR-15.
It was an AR-15. Okay, it was not a shotgun.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's important to understand. You know, I was playing a clip, and I'll play some more of that for those of you who are listening to it. We're going to play the last section of this, which is the theological journey that this one individual in South Africa had to go through to convince himself that he needed to arm himself to protect innocent life. And so we're going to play that in the next hour after we finished interviewing Mark Collins. But, you know, Mark, and the report that I was playing from the guy who was a itinerant missionary in South Africa, he stopped an attack by four terrorists with fully automatic weapons and grenades, and he did it with a small 38. And he was in the back of a massive auditorium of 1,500 people. He didn't think he'd be able to hit them, but he was able to wing one of them and then came around the backside and started. He said, I'm not going to be able to hit anything. He didn't know they'd hit one person. Went around, double around the back, and took some more shots at him. At that point, they left because they thought they were surrounded with people who could shoot. And this guy just had a 38. It's an amazing story of heroism and God's providence. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're talking to Mark Collins, former pastor of Sutherland Springs First Baptist Church. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. David Knight, and we're talking to Mark Collins. It's the power of love that made him a pastor. He was a pastor at Sutherland Springs, and he is there now to help people. I want to talk to Mark about the motives of this killer. Do you know anything, as somebody who was there for some time at that church as a pastor, Mark, do you know anything about the motives of this killer? What do you know about his background?
You know, it's interesting that they're saying that he has no connection to the church, and I did not know Devin. I don't think he ever attended that I'm aware of. But his wife, who I think was working at being his ex-wife, grew up in the church, and I think there was a grudge against his in-laws. And
yes.
They believe, of course, it's speculation. But they believe that they were the target, and they weren't there that morning, but the wife's grandmother was.
Wow.
And,
was she killed?
Yes, she was.
Wow.
And so they believe, you know, he might have, he seemed to be armed and had more guns in the vehicle, like he wasn't done for the day. So there again, although that citizen that engaged the perpetrator really had remorse that he wasn't more prepared, I tried to encourage him. You did all you could. You ran out of your house barefoot, and you probably stopped further carnage somewhere else, for sure.
That's right.
All indicators point that direction. So to say that he had no connections to the church, I think they're going to find is not accurate.
Now, of course, the celebrities on social media, the mainstream media very quick to try to attempt to portray him as a Christian, as a conservative, as a Republican, to say that the NRA had blood on its hands, even though they had no evidence that he was even an NRA member. Probably, I doubt he was. If you look at his social media, you have out of the screenshot that people took, because now they have blocked his social media pages, but what has gone around from his Facebook, we look and we see that he has, of the 10 that were shown, things that he liked, 4 of those 10 were an atheist site. Another one was a psychic medium site. Then he had 2 news sites, 2 humor sites, and 1 police gear site. And, of course, one of the news sites was CNN. He doesn't sound like he was a conservative. And Mark, even though he had on his LinkedIn page the fact that he had been a vacation Bible school assistant, he said for a month. I've never seen a vacation Bible school that ran for a month. But this is a guy who appeared to be a very argumentative atheist, and I'm quite amazed that somebody would think that being an assistant in a vacation Bible school is something that they would put on their LinkedIn resume. But your comments on that?
Yes, as far as I know, he was not faith based in his thoughts or actions at mm-hmm. all. In fact,
they're portraying him as a Sunday school teacher.
Yes, I think they're going to regret that when all the fog clears from this. They're going to have egg on their face on that one, because I don't think he was anything close to that at all. Mm-hmm. There were many that were in fear of the life of his wife. They weren't too surprised when it came out who the perpetrator was. Most that mm-hmm. knew him felt like that made perfect sense.
Yeah.
And, so
now, you weren't pastor. It's been a while since you were pastor there, and you knew a little of the family that was there. Are you aware of what had happened to cause him to get a dishonorable discharge in the military? He was convicted of assaulting his wife and his child, right?
Yes, and I believe that must have been a previous, I'm guessing, but I don't know that for sure. I don't know if that was the young lady that grew up in the church. Or if it was another wife. I don't know his history at all, and mm-hmm. I did not know Devin. As far as I know, I never met him. But, the church had a fall festival for the community to celebrate, the fall on October 31st, and they had games and such. And some of the folks said that he brought his family to those festivities just on the 31st of October.
Oh, really?
And then he came back and did what he did.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's kind of like the situation with Dylann Roof, where he went into that church, the black church with those people, and he sat there as they were praying, and then he just starts murdering people. It's just, there are insane people out there. And I think it just underscores the fact that we can never protect ourselves from being blindsided and attacked. I mean, just look at Rand Paul, who gets tackled from the back by his neighbor, who is crazy, and breaks 5 ribs. You can't protect from being sucker punched or ambushed or whatever, but there are people, and it's always good people who stop the attacks by the evil people. And I think it's very important for people to understand that many Christians do not want to get involved in firearms. They don't want to pick that up and train with it, because they don't want to fight back. They take a pacifist situation. But I think that we have to understand that we have a responsibility and a duty to protect innocent life. Do you agree, Mark?
Yes, absolutely. And where that protection starts is in the moral foundation and the fiber of our nation. And that's what's being lost. And that's what we don't understand. If Devin was not created overnight, mm-hmm. Here's a person void of faith, void of a moral compass, and we're seeing more and more, and we should expect to see more and more of this until we have that moral compass. There was a bunch of pastors who are friends of First Baptist Sutherland Springs and of Frank and the families that were there, and we circled up last night, and as we were praying for Devin's family, because what a weight, a burden to know that it was your son that did all of this. So our heart goes out to them. But what happened in this young man's life? One person said, if you replay the tape of our lives, we all make perfect sense. And yes. So Devin makes perfect sense for what he's going through. And without that moral compass, without Christ in our lives, this is what we're going to get. And it shouldn't surprise us. And it just baffles me how liberal media looks at this and says, well, how could this happen? Devin Kelly makes perfect sense if you were to go back and replay his life.
They always focus on the externals. They focus on the tools of a murderer and not how the murderer became that way. And as you point out, that is really what is happening to our country. You know, as we've got the picture here of you, for those of who are looking at this, this is a split screen. On one side of it, you see the face of George Washington, and on the other side, you see the face of Mark Collins. Amazing physical resemblance there. You go around to schools and you talk to people about George Washington, and I think it's interesting, Mark, that we see the foundations of this country being attacked now, tearing down and defacing statues of Washington, of Christopher Columbus, of anyone who is associated with the foundations of our culture, of our legal system, and of Christianity, all under attack now. And this is the result of it, this individual that we see here.
Yes, yes. And then we're gonna see more unless we go back to those old paths in which we found success, as it says in Isaiah. You know, yes. And that's what's going to happen. But it's really amazing to see the peace of these families, that some of them, like I said, have lost 8 family members, and just the joy in their heart. They said, "I know where they're at today," and just to have that peace is supernatural. It's not of this world. And
that's right.
So we celebrate the lives of those that were lost, but just the quality of the people that were lost. Very unfortunate, truly our loss, but heaven's gain for sure.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we've had a situation, as we look at this, and as the left wants to focus on firearms, we understand, anybody who knows history understands that we have had far more pervasive ownership of firearms throughout our history. But what we don't possess today, even though we possess fewer firearms per capita than we have in the past, what we don't possess is the moral integrity that came before us. And that is what we're witnessing here. This, along with things like that are external, like SSRIs and our desire to try to medicate the pain in our souls with Band-Aids like SSRIs that only exacerbate the condition. This is really what we're seeing at the root of this. It is the moral decay of America, isn't it, Mark?
It is. It truly is. What was it Washington said? It's impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible. And, you know, what a statement. And they understood, those founders understood. And, you know, to like I say, I was amused and a little bit saddened to listen to some of the liberal media folks behind their cameras, behind the lines, you know, just talking about gun control, talking it up. And I just wanted to shake them and say, do you realize the number one cause of unnatural death in this world for the last 100 years is homicide, death by murder by government? And,
that's right. That's right. And again, suicide, too, as part of that, because of a sickness of the soul, killing themselves, killing other people. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark Collins. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. And we've got a news break at the top of the hour. And then we're going to play the final comments from the individual who fought back at a church to tell you why you need to fight back to protect innocent life. It's your duty. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
Information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to play the final installment of the interview that I had with Charles Van Vick. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Lord Monckton, and he's going to give us an update as to what's going on with Brexit, with Catalan, and also with the some amazing research that he's done that shows the fraud of the model, is I guess the best way to put it. It shows how the climate change models are fraudulent. What is real science? You know, we had Harrison Ford come out and say, you know, the problem that we have is that we've got people who are ruling this world who don't understand science. Well, I guess we should take a lecture from the guy who has been a pioneer in hyperspace travel. But I'm not really sure what his scientific credentials are. Lord Monckton is going to explain to us what the scientific process is. How do we do science? Maybe we should talk about that. And we are going to talk about that with him at the bottom of the hour. We're also going to talk about gun control and the fake news, how CNN covered this story and some other stories. It was an interesting back and forth between CNN and Kellyanne Conway. Of course, the guy who was at CNN was the individual who looks kind of like George Costanza from Seinfeld. Every time I look at him, I can't get past that. But he's not as nice even as George Costanza. And George Costanza wasn't really a nice guy in that show. But let's get back to the news. You know, as we're looking at the liberals calling for gun control, and as Mark Collins, a former pastor of the church, is down there ministering to people, and as he said, as he's listening to the mainstream media talk about gun control as they're covering this, we need to remember, as we approach the 100th, this, we've now hit the 100th anniversary of the coup in Russia, as Zero Hedge points out, remembering communism's bloody century. That was the title of an article that they had. And if you haven't familiarized yourself with the term democide, as Mark Collins was pointing out, that's death by government. The tens of millions of people who were killed by government, particularly communism, in the 20th century. And we need to understand that that always begins, whether it is the authoritarians of communism or whether it is the authoritarians of fascism. They always want to take your guns first. Gun control began in Nazi Germany, and they made it into an art in the communist countries. Of course, they also banned religion as well. So keep that in mind as the left is telling you that we have to surrender our freedoms, that we have to be spied upon, that we have to they have to confiscate our firearms. We're going to talk about gun control. We're going to talk about the fake media. Real quickly, this news blitz at the top of the hour, we have Congressman Matt Gaetz has introduced a resolution calling for the recusal of Special Prosecutor Mueller. He said evidence has emerged that the FBI withheld information from Congress and from the American people about Russian corruption of American uranium companies. A confidential U.S. witness working in the Russian nuclear industry revealed that Russia had deeply compromised an American uranium trucking firm through bribery and financial kickbacks. Although federal agents possessed this information in 2010, the Department of Justice continued investigating this matter for over 4 years. The FBI, led at the time by Robert Mueller, required the confidential witness to sign a non-disclosure agreement. When the witness attempted to contact Congress and federal courts about the bribery and corruption that he witnessed, he was threatened with legal action by the FBI. By silencing him, Obama's Justice Department and Mueller's FBI knowingly kept Congress in the dark about Russia's significant and illegal involvement with American uranium companies. These deeply troubling events took place when Mr. Mueller was director of the FBI. As such, his impartiality is hopelessly compromised. He must step down immediately. And I would add that calls about an investigation about corruption and obstruction of justice should begin in its place. It is absolutely amazing that the individuals in charge of this obstruction, in charge of this illegal transfer of material, should be the ones leading an investigation into every aspect of President Trump's life. And understand, as I pointed out before, the authorization for the Office of Special Prosecutor expired long ago, 18 years ago. There is, as Al Gore would say, no controlling legal authority, and there is nothing legal about this investigation. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. We're going to talk in this segment about the push for gun control. But before we do, I want you to hear the last segment of my interview a couple of years ago with a man who was in a church that was attacked in South Africa. He was the only individual armed in that church. It was a very large auditorium there, could seat 1,500 people. He was at the back far corner away from where the attackers came in. And there were four individuals with fully automatic weapons and grenades They began by throwing grenades in and opening fire, just spraying the crowd. And he was able to stop this one man who only had a .38 special with five shots in it. But I want to play the segment where he was talking about how he had to think about whether he should protect innocent life as a Christian, whether he should use force. He subsequently came to the conclusion that he wrote a book called Shooting Back and talked about not only your right, but your duty to protect innocent life. Let's go back to this interview with Charles Van Vick. God's providence that you were able to stop this with just a .38 and five shots. But you were the man that God used. Tell us how you came to carry a .38 with you to church.
David, a long time before that, I was traveling with a friend near a little town called Wellington outside of Cape Town. We were going through to his parents' farm, and I was driving a small little pickup, very small little vehicle. And all of a sudden, there were tires burning in the streets of the car, and that was the African National Congress, which was Nelson Mandela's political party. They were burning tires in the road, and as my car came to a standstill, they started throwing rocks and bricks at our vehicle and rocking the vehicle with these bricks that were smashing the windows and denting the vehicle. So that was what happened then. And after that, I made the decision to purchase a firearm. And the next time my life was threatened, to use it to protect myself and my family. But it was a long walk for me. I'm telling a quick story in a few minutes, It was a long theological issue for me as a Christian, whether I could carry a firearm in civilian life and then use it to defend myself. I didn't.
Well, certainly looking back at this, I mean, in hindsight, we can see that you saved a lot of lives. I mean, with 58 people that were wounded and another 11 that were killed. And these guys said after they caught them that they'd been given instructions to throw petrol bombs, Molotov cocktails into the church. It would have been massive carnage if you hadn't fired back at them. And they fled.
Many people said they were expecting them to actually walk up and down the aisles and just mow people down.
Yes.
And after the attack, I reached out to them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And one of the unit commanders said to me, I knew all about the attack before it took place. And our greatest desire was that there wouldn't be a living soul afterwards.
Wow. And you stopped that by having a gun. As I said, we can see in retrospect, but talk to people who are pacifists, people who are Christian pacifists. Tell them about this journey that you took and how important it is. Because we're looking at this right now, we're thinking about the political aspect of it. Every time we have a shooting in America, we have the president and those who want to take away our firearms. They will use this as an opportunity to try to do that. But I want you to talk to the people out there maybe who are sitting on the sidelines, who are naively thinking that the government is going to protect them. Because how long did this whole thing take? It didn't take that long, did it?
No, David, it's probably a couple of seconds. You know, there was write-ups in the newspapers talking about it being minutes. It was all a couple of seconds. A grenade takes, 5 to 7 seconds to go off. And in that time, everything was finished and over and they were gone.
Yes.
So, and as I said, some people were expecting them to walk up and down the aisles. That never happened because one of them had been injured, shot at. And so they ran away.
And no matter how good the government is, the government would not have been able to help anyone there. And we've had honest sheriffs in America tell people in high crime cities like Detroit, look, we'll do what we can to stop these people and arrest them, but you need to get a firearm. You need to train yourself so that you're not a victim. And then we'll find the bad guys after you defend yourself. But we can't get there quickly enough. So talk to Christians and tell them about this theological journey that you went through, your perspective.
Sure. Well, we have a saying that a gun in the hand is better than a cop on the phone. and so I think that gives you a bit of insight into the way we feel about it here. But the scriptures are very clear. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And provision isn't only for food. Provision is also for the security of your family. That's why people put locks on doors. That's why they have security gates and burglar bars and these sorts of things where we live in South Africa. It's because we need to protect our families. And if we don't do anything to protect them, then the scripture is saying that we're worse than an unbeliever. In other words, this is a primary responsibility that we have.
Yes. Yes. If good people, if Christians are not going to defend the innocent, that is worse than an unbeliever. To me, I look at it as if someone were to come into my home and they were to start to beat my child in front of me, and I just sat there and say, well, I can't strike them because I'm a Christian. No, I have to defend the innocent because I'm a Christian.
That's right. Exactly. And I wrote a book on this called Shooting Back, and the subtitle is The Right and Duty of Self-Defense. In other words, it's not just a right that you have. You have a duty before God to protect the innocent, and especially those whom he's entrusted to you. And so it's actually a disgrace for Christian men to say that they're not willing to protect the innocent. In fact, when it talks in the scriptures about how a man loves his wife, the idea is that you must love her like Christ loved the church. That means you need to be prepared to die for your wife, not to stand by and watch while she gets raped or murdered by somebody.
Yes.
That's just pure cowardice in the face of the enemy.
Yes, and certainly it's interesting because, you know, we typically think about.
And that's what we saw yesterday as the individual who stopped the shooter got there as quickly as he could. He was delayed. He said he felt bad because his weapon was locked up in his gun case. He didn't have it loaded. It took time for that, but he still saved a lot of lives. He ran even before he put his shoes on, as Mark Collins, a former pastor there at that church, explained to us. Let's take a look at gun control and the calls for gun control. Remember, or maybe you didn't remember, back in August of this year, because it wasn't really reported in this country, that there was a shooting in Melbourne, Australia. Remember Australia, the place where they banned all firearms, where they collected them, where you've seen pictures of them crushing the guns publicly? Well, that didn't stop a drive-by shooting in Melbourne, Australia, this last August. The man that was shot died. They said it was a suspected drive-by shooting in Melbourne, Australia. As 12 bullets were found inside the house, the victim had been standing in front of the house, and at the time that this article was written, they were still trying to find the gunman. They said he's still on the run. You see, bad guys are going to be able to get guns, or they're going to be able to use cars to run down people, or they will pull out their butcher knives and slit your throat, grabbing whatever innocent young people or women they can find. That's what they're about. And that's why we need to have the tools to protect ourselves. And that's why I wanted to play that for you, because you need to understand that it is your duty to protect innocent life. But let's take a look at what some of the Hollywood stars are telling us, because they know what's best. Chelsea Handler is blaming Republicans immediately, the former Netflix talk show host whose show was canceled. And now she's going to be a full-time political activist. So you're going to be hearing a lot from her. She said, innocent people go to church on Sunday to honor their God, and while doing so, get shot and killed. What country? America? Why Republicans? She said at other times, she said, obviously, the state of gun control in this country is totally unacceptable. And the gun lobby is so strong and so powerful that anytime a celebrity can bring attention to this cause, among other causes, you know, it's an easy thing for anyone to do. She said, nobody's trying to take away your guns. Actually, she is. And actually, they have absolutely no clue. I can bet you they're not going to talk much about the heroes who stopped this shooting. They're going to focus on every other aspect so they can take away your God-given liberties that are protected by the Constitution. They better get a constitutional amendment for that. And we better have a government that starts removing the infringements that they've already put on. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 6th, 2017. I want to take a look at some of the more calls for gun controls from liberals, but I also want to take a look at the fake news from CNN, because we had some amazingly stupid things said yesterday. And of course, we've got Glenn Beck calling us stupid because we attacked Jake Tapper for saying that Allahu Akbar was a beautiful thing. Used at beautiful events, under beautiful circumstances. We understand exactly what Jake Tapper was saying. And I got banned by Jake Tapper yesterday. Isn't that amazing? I guess Twitter is going to be next. I was absolutely amazed to find out when I saw some news about Alec Baldwin
and the Twitter spats that he got in with people. And I've never, I don't remember ever sending anything to Alec Baldwin. As far as I'm concerned, he's a non-entity, both politically and entertainment-wise. But when I went to look, I thought, well, how many people has he got even following him? Is this an issue? Why are we seeing so many stories about this? So I went to look at his Twitter handle to see how many people he had, and I was banned from Alec Baldwin. So I guess I'm getting around. I don't know. It's an honor. It's an honor to be banned by Jake Tapper and by Alec Baldwin because of what they're doing. But we'll tell you a little bit more about that. Before we do, real quickly, and we've got Lord Monckton joining us in the next segment. We're going to talk about, we've been talking about the shooting in Texas, and we're going to finish up in this segment talking about that, and we're going to start talking about climate change, about Brexit, and about Catalonia, because those are very important issues that affect all of us as well. Before we get back to the news, I just want to remind you of some of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. This is what supports this operation and what keeps us independent and allows us to go toe-to-toe and expose the lies of Jake Tapper, the lies of Glenn Beck. And we've got a news conference coming up real quickly here. We're going to cut to in just a moment. I want to remind you that we have Biome Defense now back in stock. You can get that at 25% off. Some of the other popular items that we have reduced in price as a thank you to those of you who support our operation: Survival Shield X2, that's our nascent iodine. Also, BioTrue Selenium, that's our 100% non-GMO. It's made from organic mustard seed. Our BioTrue Selenium is 40% off. Winter Sun, our vitamin D supplement, 50% off. Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, 50% off. And you can also get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. Just enter the code VITA10 at checkout. That's VITA10 at checkout to get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. We really do appreciate your support. All right, let's cut to that news conference that we've got going right now. I see that we've got that there. You guys ready with that?
He was residing in New Braunfels, Texas. The cause and manner of the death in this, with the shooter, will be determined by pathologists during the autopsy. However, investigators found evidence at the scene that indicates the subject may have died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. We can tell you, as in with all active shooter situations, the number one goal of law enforcement is to neutralize the shooter. In this situation, we had two Good Samaritans that did that for law enforcement. This call went out as an active shooter call. Law enforcement was responding, but we know that a local resident that lives across the street from the church heard what was going on. He armed himself with an AR assault rifle and engaged the suspect. They engaged in gunfire here at the church. We know that the suspect was shot when he dropped his assault rifle, jumped in his Ford Expedition, and fled the scene. This Good Samaritan, our Texas hero, flagged down another young man from Seguin, Texas, and jumped in his vehicle, and they pursued the suspect. We know during that pursuit, the suspect used his cell phone to notify his father that he had been shot and didn't think he was going to make it. Subsequently, he shot himself, and so the as I said, the pathologist will determine the cause and manner of his death. We can confirm that the suspect did not have a license to carry. The suspect did have a non-commissioned, unarmed private security license, similar to a security guard at a concert type situation. There were no disqualifiers entered into the National Crime Information Center database that would preclude him from receiving a private security license. Private security background checks, including fingerprints and a criminal history checks with the Texas Crime Information Center and National Crime Information Center databases, were checked, and he was cleared. I can tell you there is video recording from inside the church that has been secured, and we have viewed the video. The crime scene investigation will go on for days. All the bodies have been removed from the church. Our victims will be autopsied at the Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office. As I said, our suspect was autopsied.
All right, let's come back and just recap what they're saying at this live press conference. They believe that he died from a self-inflicted wound, that he didn't just necessarily bleed out. He had been shot. And as Mark Collins had told us from there, and of course a former pastor of that church, said that the reports that the hero who stopped this used a shotgun were inaccurate, that he had an AR-15 as well. So he was able to shoot him in the side where he did not have body armor. At that point, he dropped his gun and he fled. I didn't hear the person giving the briefing say anything about a hostage, so not clear exactly what's going on with that. But they're now saying they have not determined exactly, but they believe that he may have died from a self-inflicted wound rather than bleeding out. But I think it was a matter of time anyway. And as they're saying, he was able to clear the background checks. The gun was purchased at Academy Sports, which is a large chain. I know that they do background checks. It's not anything with them that was skirted. It was the fact that they did not have him listed in a no-purchase database, even though he had assaulted both his wife and his child. He was 1 year in prison in the military, was dishonorably discharged, and yet did not have down as a felony listing, somehow was able to escape that. Let's take a look at the insanity from the left as celebrities are calling for gun control. Now, to remember that it was a citizen with a gun that stopped more death and would have, he wishes that he could have been there sooner. And of course, so do the police. You can't get everywhere where there is an issue. This is a very small town, and it still took them more than 5 or 6 minutes to get to the church at that time. They were long gone, and the people who were who had stopped him and who were pursuing him were on the phone, 911, with the police telling them where the individual was, and it still took another 5 to 7 minutes for the police to get to the site where the car had stopped and pulled over, crashed on the side of the road. But we have this kind of stuff coming from Stephen King, the horror novelist. He says, how many more have to die before we enact sane gun control laws? Yeah, well, you know, when we look at the left, we look at people like Stephen King, and we, as Mark Collins pointed out, what we're seeing here is not the fact that we need to get rid of guns, but we have a deep moral problem in this country. And people like Stephen King, people like Sarah Silverman, people like Josh Gad, Chelsea Handler, they are contributing to this situation, just as they have contributed to the moral depravity of America, these Hollywood pedophiles. They bear a great deal of blame for the society that we have, the moral sickness that is at the heart of this. But we still have good people, and those people have a right to protect themselves, to protect others. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back with Lord Monckton. Stay with us.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's the real news with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We've been talking about the horrific shooting just south of here in Sutherland Springs, Texas. We're going to change our topic now and have Lord Christopher Monckton join us from the UK. And of course, if you're a listener to InfoWars, you've heard Lord Monckton many times. He's a businessman, newspaper editor, an inventor of a great puzzle that still has a lot of people scratching their head, unable to solve it. A classical architect, trained orator, and a high priest of climate skepticism. That's what we're going to talk to him about in this interview, as well as what's going on with Brexit. We want to get an update on that. He was a special advisor to Margaret Thatcher as she served as prime minister from 1982 to 1986. And, of course, you can find many of his papers published at What's Up With That. That's W-A-T-T-S, whatsupwiththat.com. But I want to talk to him about some about a paper that he's going to be giving in about 2 days, I believe, at the Karl Popper Memorial Lecture. I think he has a real breakthrough here, breaking down the flaws of the climate models, and I want him to explain that to us. But, you know, Lord Monckton, we had a news item today about Harrison Ford, and he says the greatest threat that we have today is people who don't believe and science. And although Harrison Ford has made remarkable contributions to our world in terms of hyperspace travel, I'm not really sure that he's qualified to speak about science like you are. I don't know what his degree is in, and I don't think he understands the scientific method, because the scientific method isn't something that is based around belief or around faith. We keep hearing these people call us deniers as if it's their religion, and to a degree, I think it truly is their religion, isn't it?
Well, David, it's a pleasure to be with you. And first of all, every sympathy to the families of the latest victim of a shooting. And it does seem to me that the answer lies in your constitution, which says that you can hold guns in the context of being part of a trained militia for the protection of the population. What that means is you can't just go in and buy a gun. You ought to be trained first. That's what the Constitution says. And I think a lot of these mass shootings would stop if that constitutional provision were properly enacted. And from our experience in trying to ban guns here in the United Kingdom after we had a mass shooting at a school, the result was that crime related to the use of handguns went up by 40% in the following year and hasn't gone back down again since. So banning handguns is not the answer. Training people to use them properly and safely is the answer, and that's what your constitution calls for. So implement it. And so to climate change. Now, yes, we are about to announce a major discovery, the discovery which will finally demonstrate that those of us who have been called climate deniers, with that deliberate and nasty flavor of association with people who deny that 6 million Jews were killed under the Nazis by Adolf Hitler. That's why they use that word of us. Yes. Harrison Ford is no doubt better than I am at driving the Millennium Falcon, but I don't think that he's as good as I am at doing climatological physics. In fact, I don't think he'd know where to start, to be honest. I and my team, for the last 2 years, have been working very hard on something which some of us, including my colleague Michael Limburg, who is my host in Germany for the talk that I'm about to give in Dusseldorf in a couple of days' time, as you say, we have been looking for, he's been looking for 15 years for this particular error, which we have finally run to earth. And the error is a fascinating one, and I'm going to describe it to you in 30 seconds, and you'll find you'll be able to understand it just fine, though Harrison Ford might find it rather difficult. So here we go.
Well, his mind is closed is the problem, is that his mind is closed. But give us your 30-second breakdown. Yes.
That's right. So very simple. Here is what we've discovered. We've discovered that officially they say there will be 1 Celsius of global warming per doubled CO2 directly from the extra CO2. Then they say there'll be another 2.5 Celsius on top of that from what they call temperature feedbacks, more water vapor in the atmosphere, less ice to reflect the sun back, the sun's rays back into space, etc. They call these feedbacks, and they say that multiplies by about 2.5 the original 1 Celsius of warming from doubling CO2. Now, what we've discovered is that those feedbacks will largely not happen because they have been calculating them incorrectly. And there will only be about 0.25 Celsius of additional warming from feedback. So you're looking at about 1.3 Celsius for doubled CO2 concentration and not the 3.3 that is their central case at the moment, and certainly not the 10 or 12 Celsius that Professor Schellnhuber of the Potsdam Communist Climate Institute has been hawking around as the likely effect of our influence on the climate. So what we've discovered is that these feedbacks have been incorrectly calculated by climate scientists who have borrowed their method of analyzing feedbacks from control theory, which is a different branch of science and a much more disciplined one than climatology, and they've borrowed the mathematics from control theory without understanding it. And they've all copied each other's errors for 120 years until now.
Wow, wow, that's amazing. So it breaks down the infamous hockey stick that Michael Mann has put out there for us, that Al Gore made a movie about.
Yes, that was always nonsense, the hockey stick, which is a supposedly a record of temperature change on the surface of the Earth over the last 1,000 years it goes back. And the idea is that it declined gently until about 100 years ago, and then mankind began influencing it, and it suddenly shot up. The truth is that it was warmer in the Middle Ages, during the warm period when the great cathedrals of Europe were built, than it's been at any time since, including today. It then got a lot colder in what's called the Little Ice Age about 300 years ago. You're too young to remember all this, so I'm just reviewing it for you. And then it has got warmer again, but not as warm as the medieval warm period. And so what Michael Mann came along, he used some very, very dodgy techniques to try to wipe out the medieval warm period and pretend that today's warming was unprecedented in at least the last 1,300 years. That was the kind of slogan that came out. But one scientist who looked at this commented wryly that Michael Mann ought not to be at Penn State University. He ought to be in the state pen, because there was so much wrong with the way that he did it. Michael Mann, I should point out, disagrees with the notion that he should be in the state pen, and he sues anybody who says that. So I'm not saying that. I'm merely recording the fact that somebody else has said that and is being sued. But
well, he is a bit litigious, and he does not want to see his basic research data or information made public. And I was with a group that tried to challenge that, the attorney general in the state of Virginia. And of course, you were talking about how your research created a great deal of consternation at the University of East Anglia. And people may remember that was where the ClimateGate emails eventually came out of. We had two different releases of emails saying, hey, this is not working. We need to hide the decline and so forth. And they were also corresponding to Michael Mann in the University of Virginia. Those of us who were trying to get that information said, public policy is being made on this. You have already concluded your studies. And since this was funded by the public because it was done on a public university server, we should be able to see your basic data there. And he said, he claimed privilege, said, this is my private data, even though it was a university email. So he eventually succeeded in that argument. Amazingly, the government allowed him to continue on with that. And he is now at the University of Pennsylvania. But I want to talk about the reaction to your research when we come back from the break. And I also want to ask you about the correlation, because what you're looking at here in terms of analyzing their model and saying that they've calculated the feedback incorrectly, we've also seen an increase in CO2, but we have seen that the oceans are actually cooling, going in the other direction, which predominates over any surface temperature measurements that they make. It's very easy for them to move where they take the surface measurements to make sure that they get the results that they want. That's one of the ways that they hide the decline. So we're going to continue talking to Lord Monckton in the next segment. And I also want to get some information about him as to the state of Brexit, what we see happening in Catalonia, because that is part of the move against the centralization of power into a world government. We're seeing some very interesting developments there. A lot to talk about in the next segment with Lord Monckton. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lord Christopher Monckton. He has a paper that is going to be presented this week in Dusseldorf, Germany. It's significant that he's doing this at the Karl Popper Memorial Lecture Service, because what he's doing is exposing the fatal error of the climate alarmists. And as we saw from Harrison Ford saying, we've got people who don't believe in science. Lord Monckton, tell us about Karl Popper, the guy who had so much to do to codify the scientific method. It's not based on belief, is it? It's not based on the consensus of a lot of credentialed scientists either.
No, you're quite right. Karl Popper, who was an Austrian scientist, got out just in 1937 because he saw that the Nazis were going to impose their daft consensus science on his country. So he got away to the West, but he had, before he went, already written his masterwork, Logik der Forschung, or The Logic of Scientific Discovery, in which he describes the process of scientific discovery, the scientific method, as it is called, as a rational process of inquiry. You start with a general problem, and the one we've started with is that the models are overpredicting global warming. Then you advance a tentative theory to address that general problem. In our case, the theory is that they screwed up in their models, in their calculation of feedbacks, as we discussed before the break. And then we have an error elimination phase. And this is where the fun really starts. Everybody else then piles in and attacks what we say and to try and prove us wrong. And this process, and this process began when we submitted our paper to the Journal of Climate, a very short version of the paper, because the point is a very simple point that we're making. And they should have reviewed it and come back with an answer in 2 weeks. They didn't. They took 3 months and then they rejected it. But they didn't reject it on any sound scientific criteria. They rejected it for purely political reasons. And what had happened in the meantime was that somehow, and I will not say exactly how, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Climate, Dr. Tim Del Sol, who handled our paper personally, sent a copy to somebody who sent it to the University of East Anglia, where the vice-chancellor got to hear of it, and that's Professor David Richardson. He called a meeting of the entire environmental sciences faculty, some 65 professors and doctors of science, all of whom true believers in the new religion, or as he thought, all of them. In fact, one of them wasn't, which is how I got to hear about it. And that person has managed to keep his or her powder dry by not revealing that he or she doesn't actually believe in the new religion. And the vice-chancellor called a meeting. This was in August. It was shortly before our paper was eventually rejected. And what he said was this. This is a catastrophe, he said. If the general public ever gets to hear of Monckton's paper, there will be hell to pay for all of us. And he directed them all to drop everything and to spend as long as it took working completely to recalculate the way feedbacks are handled in climatology, and then to start publishing papers all over the place to neutralize our paper. That was what he did. It was a most extraordinary meeting. There's been never had any of those who were there heard the like of it before. Here was a layman making a very simple point, and instead of saying, this is glorious news, we no longer have a problem with global warming, or we think that, although it would be glorious news, we think that Monckton may have got it wrong, so let us check. Instead, he said, it would be a catastrophe if Monckton was right. Why? Because the money would stop flowing. So that's what right. It's all about, for people like the University of East Anglia, it's about the crinkle. It's about the money. That's what they're really wanting.
And it's also about their reputation, because they argue from the position of authority. They don't argue from a position of the science or the math behind this. They argue from the position that, look, we have more people on our side than you do on your side, or we've got more degrees or higher degrees or better universities. It's always this argument from authority rather than a scientific argument. You present a scientific argument to them, and if they walk away with egg on their face, yeah, it's going to have a lot of economic as well as a lot of political fallout for these people.
I think that's true. But one thing it does tell us is they know we're right. Can you imagine this? The editor of one of the leading climate journals sends the paper somehow to the University of East Anglia. I'm not laying any blame here. I don't mind if people circulate our research. It's not the normal scientific ethics. Normally, the reviewers, of whom there were two or three, should have read it privately, commented on it privately, and sent it back to the editor and sent it to us. Somehow, that paper got to the University of East Anglia. But what the Vice Chancellor's comments show is they know perfectly well that we are right about this. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're worried. And that's a very good sign, because it's going to be very tough to get this paper reviewed in any climate journal, because it's quite clear from the reviews we've had from the Journal of Climate that the reviewers were entirely, and I mean entirely, incompetent to assess the control theory aspects of the paper. And that's what the paper is all about. So we are now approaching control theorists. I've tried to get in touch with the professor of control theory here at the University of Bristol, but he hasn't replied. They're all terrified by this paper. I'm going to try one or two others. And we've also got some of my distinguished co-authors. You'll have heard of Dr. Willie Soon at the Harvard-Smithsonian Institute for Astrophysics, Professor yes. David B. Gates, Michael Lindberg himself is an electronic engineer and understands control theory. All of these people are eminent scientists, and they think we're right about this, or they wouldn't be co-authors of the paper. So this is major breaking news. And for the first time in Dusseldorf, I will be spelling out in very nearly an hour-long standard-length academic lecture to the very distinguished audience, mostly from Germany, but also internationally, some from France, some from America, some from Sweden, some from Britain, who will be listening. And these will be high-powered climate scientists, by no means all of them skeptical of the official position. Some of them will be healthily skeptical of my position and that of my team. But we will spell out our argument in full. We will be making all of our data and the underlying academic paper and the full text of my lecture and all the slides. There are 150 slides that are going to appear very rapidly during this 40-minute talk. And all of these will be publicly available, and we will be willing to answer questions from scientists or members of the public.
And that's the way that it should be. They don't allow that type of questioning of their authority. Because exactly. That's what they appeal to. And, of course, history is filled with examples of a consensus, a scientific consensus, being shown to be wrong by one person. That's the way science usually advances. There's usually a consensus and somebody who is skeptical. I mean, science is based on skepticism and of proof, not on belief, as Harrison Ford would tell us. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Lord Monckton, and I wanted to get your comments on what's going on with Brexit, because we've seen Nigel Farage say it looks like Theresa May is not really committed to this. He actually called her Theresa Maybe. What is your take on what's happening with Brexit, and if we have time, Catalonia?
I've known Theresa May since she was at Oxford and I at Cambridge, and she is an establishment figure to her fingertips. She hates the idea of Brexit and always has. That's why the government didn't fight the case to delay the letter telling them we were leaving after the referendum, because if they'd fought it properly, they'd have said, look, it is our obligation under the EU treaties to tell our partners we're going, and that would have been the end of the case. They didn't use that line, and from that moment on, I knew that Theresa May, whatever she said about Brexit meaning Brexit, was playing a very dirty game. And of course, how does Catalonia fit into all this? Well, it's a very interesting question, because the post-colonial disposition in international law, something that might commend it to you colonials over in the United States, has it that if a recognizable territory, and Catalonia is about 6% of Spain and 20% of its economy, wishes to form its own administration and votes to do so, then in international law, it has the absolute right to do so, regardless of the constitution of the country it belonged to before. And so although the Spanish government is quite right to say under our constitution you can't do this, under the wider aegis of international law, the Catalans are fully within their rights to seek independence. And their leaders should certainly not be arrested under this ghastly European arrest warrant procedure and extradited back to Spain and flung into jail for it. Though that is how the Spaniards have traditionally dealt with dissenters, they haven't really quite got the idea of democracy yet. Whereas in Scotland, that's we right. were much cleverer. What we did was to have a vote, say we would accept the will of the Scottish people, and the Scottish people, realizing what nice people we were, voted by a very substantial margin to remain in the United Kingdom. And that's how it should have been done in Spain. And because they are moving so viciously against the leaders of the Catalan rebellion, you heard it here first, Catalonia will become independent within the next 20 or 30 years, and there's nothing whatever that Spain can do to stop it. Just as we will leave the European Union on the 19th of March 2019, whether anybody likes it or not, we're going. Bye-bye.
That's right. It's an idea that is sweeping the world. And that idea, novelly enough, is what founded America, the right of self-governance. And they're not going to be able to stop that by force. Hope that it does not get violent. Thank you for joining us, Lord Monckton. You can find him and his articles at whatsupwiththat.com. That's it for our program. Stay tuned for Alex Jones.